Well, as you know, we've been kind of in one of those times of, let's go back to the cartoon, John. I love this investment bank. The teller is the one holding up the you know, you and me coming in. You know, boy, how times have changed. When I was in grad school, I learned my first lesson about debt. Thankfully, I was single, and thankfully, I was barely making enough money just to pay my way through school. Full-time student, just enough to eat on, basically, pay for my dorm. And we had two bookstores, one on campus and one right across the street from campus, and I was a hopeless bookaholic. I would go and through the bookstore and just buy books that just looked great, and I'd had the greatest of intentions of buying those books and reading them. And I would get the bill. You know, this is where I first discovered, you know, just put it on my account. You know, what a phrase that is. And so I'd put these books on my account. And then I get the bill at the end of the month, and I'm thinking, there's no way I can pay that whole bill. Well, I can pay half of it. And so I'd write a check for half of it. And, you know, this is like 30-something years ago. And so at the time, I was writing checks for like $20 or $25, you know. But over the course of a year, both of my accounts, those bookstores, just kept rising. And at the end of the year, both of the bookstores wanted payment in full the next month. And I panicked. I thought, there's no way. How am I going to pay off that much money? Again, this is in 1974, $5. But the total bill between the two bookstores was like $160, I think $160 for the two together. And so somebody said, well, they'll give you a loan at the over in the student union. So I went over and got a loan, no interest loan, paid the bookstores off, and then I discovered the truth of, and Allie, let's go to the verse, first verse we have. Go ahead and bump us ahead. The borrower is servant to the lender. I learned this principle. The borrower is slave to the lender. I was paying back the school $15 a month, which, again, that doesn't seem like anything. But in those days, for a part-time student, that was a lot of money to me. $15 a month. And what galled me about it was I was giving that $15 away, and I wasn't getting some books for it. Month after month, 10 months went by, $15 a month. The last month I had to pay, I think, $10. And I discovered that when I was out of debt, there was a lot of freedom there, financial freedom. It is easy to get in debt. Last time I checked, the total American debt is $1.7 trillion, three times higher than the gross domestic product of Russia. Now, that's not what our nation owes, our government. That's a whole other story. This is what we, the people, we as people, owe. $1.7 trillion in consumer debt. When I think about that, the first two words that come to my mind are instant gratification. Instant gratification. I love getting our mail, and the thing that I get more often than anything else probably you get to are credit card offers. And I was looking through a stack of these recently, because I love to read the copy of these things. I mean, they are just filled with hilarity. But you know the three words that I've discovered the most recently and credit card offers? That's pretty good. You are approved. Now, this is even more pernicious than that one. That's a good one. You deserve it. You deserve it. They don't even know me, but I deserve it. Listen, this is one from one of these ads. You deserve it. Could there possibly be a better way to achieve your financial freedom? What? Could there possibly be a worse way to destroy your financial freedom? This is an ideal way for you to become the master of your finances. Really, is that all it takes? Just get this credit card. Listen to this. The ideal way to provide yourself with the little extras you know you really deserve. Just click here and receive your shiny new card and start enjoying life. What a bunch of trash! Oh my goodness, you deserve it. Danger signs of entering the debt trap. There are six signs when you know you're starting to move in a bad direction. Number one, living on credit instead of cash. You're living on credit instead of cash. What that says is your lifestyle, barring something, it's a medical emergency or something, but your lifestyle has increased to the point above what you are able to bring home. Don't withhold repayment of your debts. Don't say some other time if you can pay it now. Some of you have heard me say that when I was a very young husband, I had a breakfast with an accountant in our church back in Texas. And I was asking him, I said, Randy, how do you know when you can afford to make a purchase? Because when we get paid, it looks like we've got a lot of money in the bank. But then, 10 days later, we are holding on by a thread until the next payday. I said, it's very confusing. How do you know how to make these decisions? And he showed me this verse. He said, the day you get paid, or as soon as you can, after the day after you get paid, he said, I sit down and I write my tithe checks to our church. I write it, and this is, you know, 30 years ago. I write a check to our savings account, and then I pay all of our bills that are due that pay period. And then I see what's left. That's your real disposable income. And as I sat there, I thought, now I know why it's so confusing to me. Because when Mindy asked me, hey, Seth, can we afford to buy this? If we just got paid, my answer was always the same. Sure, we just got paid. That was the worst time to make a financial decision. It was on payday or right after that. And I started doing this. And all of a sudden, you realize, whoa, I need to rein in the spending pretty quick. There's not as much money as I think we have to spend, disposable money, in our income. This is a great little verse. Don't say, I'll pay it later, if you have the money now. This shows a lack of contentment. Luke 3:14, Jesus told some soldiers, the problem you have is contentment, and then it presumes on the future. Proverbs says, don't brag about tomorrow. One particular study said that you are more likely to spend, on average, 23% more when you go into a store if you have a credit card in your pocket. Isn't that astounding? 23% more, as opposed to walking in with just a checkbook. And of course, you know why that is. This is not rocket science. You know that when you write that check, it's coming out of that checkbook the next day or a couple days later at the most. And so you're a little hesitant about spending a whole lot of money for a check. But you know, we really aren't that way. We're a little bit looser if we've got that credit card. Because we sort of look at that credit card as, it's not coming out of my checkbook now. It's almost like I'm spending somebody else's money. And we love to spend money that's not our own. Somebody else, that's kind of exhilarating, isn't it? To spend something and not have to worry that it's coming out of my checkbook right now. Somebody has compared buying on credit card, with getting drunk. I like this. You get the buzz right at the beginning, but the hangover comes the next morning after. I like that. Pretty good. Number one, you're living on credit instead of cash. Number two, delaying payments or paying minimums. That's a danger sign that you're moving in the wrong direction. Delaying payments, or another one you could add in there, which is very common now, is to pay one credit card with another credit card. You know you're in big trouble if you're doing that. Let no debt remain outstanding is the principle. Number three, unable to tithe or save. We looked at this a few weeks ago. Tithing, as we looked at a few weeks ago, is one of those things that helps us rein in our spending. It gets control of our heart, of that desire John talked about to always have more, to want to be content. When you give and when you save, you are getting your financial house moving in the right direction, and it almost forces you to limit what you're spending. It almost forces you to say, we don't have the discretionary money we think we do. This really is an important thing to God. In Malachi, God asked the people, will a man rob God? And yet you rob me. But the people ask, well, how do we rob you, God? How did that happen? In tithes and offerings. In other words, from God's point of view, you are using my money, that part that should be mine, for yourselves. That's not good. He calls that robbery. That's pretty out there. That's a pretty visual thing. He takes this seriously. And again, giving is not for his benefit. Giving is for our benefit. Savings is another thing that's for our benefit. It moves against that impulse buying, that instant gratification. It moves against interest working against you and your family and starts to get interest working for you and your family. Next verse on savings. The wise man saves for the future, but the foolish man spends whatever he gets. Number four, unable to pay taxes. Unable to pay taxes. Jesus said, give to Caesar what is Caesar's and to God what is God's. Number five, extravagant spending. Extravagant spending. You know, one of the early signs of moving in a wrong direction is if you've got plenty of money and you just purchase something because you have that money. It's easy to start moving in the wrong direction. You know, for example, you know, Chris talked about that barbecue that he got, you know, in that skit a few weeks ago. And, you know, I found something at the hardware store for my grill. Just had to have this. The commercial digital fork thermometer. And right there on the side, right here on the handle, it gives you the temperature of the meat. And also it goes on, off, centigrade, or Fahrenheit, because I often have those questions when I'm barbecuing. And then it's got another button that says, hold. Now, I just had to have this. I had to purchase this. I turned down the one that has, that you can put a little thing on the grill like this, I mean, in the meat, and then you take another part and clip it to your belt. And you can move up to 300 feet away, and it will tell you when the meat reaches that. I'm thinking, wow, now that's my kind of cooking right there, because I can go watch the football game and forget about all that stuff. Now, if you're thinking, hey, Seth, where'd you get that? You've missed the point here. By the way, I am taking this back. This is strictly sermon illustration. Would you hold that for me there, please? Thank you. Buying things I don't need simply because I have the money. Proverbs says, indulging in luxuries, wine, and food will never make you wealthy. It's not a good long-term solution to your family finances. And number six, looking for the get-rich-quick schemes. Get-rich-quick schemes. Proverbs says, steady plodding brings prosperity. Hasty speculation brings poverty. I never cease to be amazed when I go to Albertsons. It seems like every time I'm there, there are people lined up to play the lottery. It's just astounding to me. Here I am in front of this machine. I'm taking out money that I earned, that I should be living on, and I'm putting it in here hoping that I'm going to hit the big one. Didn't hit the big one. You can almost see the machine saying, thank you for playing. One of the first calls I got when we moved to California was from a very distraught wife whose husband had lost their home, their cars, and his job because of gambling. Okay, here's all my money. Let's play. Okay, you've taken all my money. And I was entertained for a while. Thank you very much. Hasty speculation brings poverty. That's one of those biblical promises that you can claim. It's kind of that something for nothing game that we love to think that somehow we're the exception to. Solomon says, dreaming instead of doing is foolishness. Dreaming instead of doing is foolishness. Now, those are six warning signs that you're getting into trouble. But let's talk about getting out of debt. There are nine things. One of the things I love about the Bible is it has very practical advice for us, particularly about money. Getting out of debt. Number one, commit to becoming debt-free. You make a commitment. Nobody gets out of debt accidentally. This is not an easy endeavor. This is not a short-term deal by the end of the month. This is something that's going to require a commitment. You're going to have to say, this is important. I'm going to do this. Psalm 37:21. The wicked borrow and do not repay. Sometimes I'll have families ask me, well, Seth, you know, we're so far in debt. Is it okay to file bankruptcy? There's a difference between what is legal and what is right. And just because something is legal doesn't make it right. We've had people in our church that have been tens and tens and tens and over $100,000 in debt and got out. It's hard. It's hard work. Took a lot of discipline. But they were convinced by this verse and some other ones that it was the right course of action to do. And as a result, one of the things that I had a chance to see and some of the other people in our church had a chance to see is these people end up with a pretty good story. Which comes in very handy if you have children. Especially when they become young adults and out on their own. Number one, make a commitment. Number two, start paying God and yourself first. Start paying God and yourself first. I won't spend a lot of time here because we've talked about this before. But giving and saving, again, are two things that force you to rein in that impulse buying, that force you to adjust your lifestyle, which is so hard for people to do. We just assume our lifestyle is okay. That's usually not a good assumption. You want to get interest moving in the right direction. That's the principle of saving. And then if for no other reason, you want to get God on your side of blessing your finances. I hear stories all the time about people who, okay, Seth, we're going to start tithing. I don't know how we're going to do it, but we're going to do it. And all kinds of things happen to them. I was just talking to a guy recently, one of the guys in our church, and he's in business, and he's come up to this, you know, over the years, different times, and he said, you know, Seth, we just need to do this. The guy's got more work than he can take care of, even in a terrible economy where people don't want to spend money for the things he does. I think in our life, I told you last week, in our life, you know, we have a lot of old stuff. But I've noticed at our house, old stuff seems to last a long time. Just like if you read Deuteronomy 8, when God took the people through the desert. Same principle. Because they followed him and honored him, he honored their commitments. Number three, list all you own and all you owe. List all you own and all you owe. Proverbs says, by wisdom a house is built, and through understanding it is established. What kind of equity do we have, and what kind of debits do we have? Number four, have a sale. Have a sale. You might have to have several sales. Sometimes people say, but you know, Seth, I've got stuff that's paid for. And if I sell it, I'm going to get less than what I paid for it. Of course you are. But if it has any amount of value to it or equity to it, that helps get your debt down. Sometimes you just have to sort of, you know, fold the cards. You played, you thought you had a chance of making that straight, and it's not going to happen. Like last night for me, several times at our men's event. That happened to you? A couple times? Yeah, straight and a flush for me. I know on some bigger things. You told yourself, honey, we need to buy this car for the safety of our children. That's partly true. But I got a feeling we also bought that car because I could visualize me driving through our neighborhood and people going, wow, look at that guy in that sharp car. Or driving into the office parking lot and having people run to the windows to look. Look, he's here in that car. If you've racked yourself up some debt and you're making car payments, you have no business making car payments on, it might be a good idea to try to sell your car and buy an old clunker for a couple years and get yourself right side up in terms of your car payments. I'm not saying you have to go buy a Pinto, you know, Ford Pinto. Some of you guys are old enough to remember that car. If you saw the Orange County Register today, I'd love this. In the marketplace section, there's a guy going to buy a car. And the headline says, credit where credit is due. That's one of those headlines you have to think about a couple times. Got a couple different meanings there. Credit where credit is due. You know, at first it sounds like a pretty good thing. Credit where credit is due. And then you think credit where credit is due. As in payments. And there's a picture of a guy who's third generation car salesman here in Orange County. And then there's a quote, I love this. We tell people to come on down. This is the president of the car place. We can get you financed. Oh, I'll bet you can. What he didn't tell you is the reason they can get you financed is they'll get the money from the bank and then they're going to charge you more interest than if you went to the bank yourself. Of course they're going to get you financed. In fact, in a lot of car places, they don't make so much money on the car itself, they make money on the interest payment that they sign you up with. Then they did an interview with somebody that sells cars. One of the biggest problems that people face, customers face, is they walk in with unrealistic expectations. People who want a $30,000 car but can only afford $300 a month. Basic math shows that paying $300 a month for 60 months totals $18,000. Now, that doesn't cover the interest that you're paying for 5 years. That's just you're able to pay, or you think you're able to pay for an $18,000 car, but you just bought a $30,000 car. There's another $12,000 there, principal plus interest, over, 7 years maybe, if you're going to pay that off. Have a sale. Number five. Set up a repayment plan. Set up a repayment plan. Good planning and hard work lead to prosperity. On the back or in the foyer, I've got this little sheet that I put together probably 30-something years ago called From Debt Drive to Freedom Freeway. And it's a simple little thing. You list down on the left-hand side the people or the companies you owe money to. You list the amount of money that you owe each of these people. And then you think, how much can I pay each of these people, and then across here, you just fill in that amount, and across here the month, like November, December, January, etc., until you get everybody paid off. Now, one of the tricks of this is that you put the highest interest ones at the top, and you try to pay as much as you can to that one. And then once you get that guy paid off, you take that same amount you have been paying to creditor number one, and then you add it on to creditor number two. So creditor number two might only be paying $25 a month. But when you get number one paid off, and you were paying them $75 a month, now you're paying number two $100 a month. When you get number two paid off, and number three, you're paying them $25 a month, now you've got an extra $100. $125 you're paying the creditor number three. It's a simple little tool, but use pencil as you do it. Proverbs 20:18. Get advice if you want your plans to work. Getting out of debt is not an easy thing. You may need some help. We've got some men in our church that have helped families to get out of debt. If you need some help and you'd like to be contacted, make a note on your welcome card. Alex and Michelle's group, how many weeks are you guys into this series? How many have you done? Two? Done one. Okay. If you want to get in a small group that's going through this book, see Alex and Michelle afterwards. They're going through this. And it's great, again, to be a part of a group, to ask questions, get answers, hear what other people are doing. This book we'll have out there, it's $20. I heard that we had a few books maybe a few of you thought were free. They're not free. We paid about $20 for each of these, but you can get these out there on your way out. Number six, cut your payment time in half. Cut the time in half that you're going to do. You say, well, that's impossible. I don't know how we could get a debt in half the time. I think one of the things that God loves to do is he loves to reveal himself to people. He loves to show people he's real. And one of the ways he does that is a promise in the book of 1 Samuel. He says, those who honor me, I will honor. That's a great promise. And over the years, I've seen God do that in our life. When we've taken some steps to honor him in some particular way, whether it be about finances or relationships or some very tough issues that we've been involved with, God, we're going to step out in faith. We're going to trust. We're going to honor you with this situation. And you get a chance to see God honor that, honor those commitments. Jesus says, what is impossible with men is possible with God. Number 7, add no new debt. Add no new debt. Help you get out of debt. You say, well, Seth, you guys have credit cards. We have 3 credit cards. We have a Discover card, and we try to buy everything we buy as much as we can on that Discover card because we get a nice cashback thing every August usually, and that's a pretty good windfall for us that we wouldn't get by using a Visa or MasterCard. We have a Visa card, which we only use, virtually only use, when the place we're buying something doesn't take Discover. So that's hardly used at all. And then we have a MasterCard, and that's used for kind of the same principle, but kind of a different use, partly Christie's expenses and partly my business expenses that we use on that card. But the main thing is a Discover card. Is it okay to have credit cards? It's okay as long, in my opinion, as you have 3 things you keep in mind. Number 1, you pay the balance off monthly. You end up with a 0 balance when that card, when you write it off. Number 2, you don't buy anything you can't afford with that credit card. And number 3, if you violate either number 1 or number 2, you come to my office. And I've got something in my office that I have gladly used with some of the families in our church over the years. I've thought about keeping some of the slivers of those plastic things. You may not be ready for such a big step as the scissors. Another thing that a few families in our church have done is they have said to me, Seth, would you hold our credit card? I will. I've got a place for just that very thing. And if you need it, and they'll tell me, if I need it, I'll come and get it from you. And I'll say, okay. And it, it's hard to spend money if you don't have that credit card in your wallet. Pretty good little idea there. Or, something you might have a little, you're looking for a little family fun on a Sunday afternoon, and especially if it's a rainy day. And I've got an idea for you. You can take a cookie sheet, a little family fun with your kids, and take your credit cards, put them on the cookie sheet, preheat the oven to 450 degrees, stick that thing in there. Watch your worries melt away. Now, you know what the funnest part of this little endeavor is? Is take each of those cards, get a spatula, stick them in an envelope, and mail them back to the banks that sent them to you. Please don't send us any of these things anymore. Just a good little family idea that you can do on your own. Hebrews 13:5 says, be content with what you have. Number 8, share my plan with my creditors. Sometimes when people get in debt, I don't know if I should pick up the phone. I don't know if I should answer the mail. Don't get it. I'll check the messages later. Well, the funny thing is, creditors almost universally are willing to work with you if you're just upfront with them. I remember one of the first guys I helped with, he had about 25 creditors. He had just also lost his job. And half of the money he owed was to the IRS for business taxes. They had not, their company, the 3 owners, including him, had not set aside. He was completely over his head. He filled out his little debt driveway sheet, 25 things on there. And it's pretty cool. Because over time, God sort of met him along the way. And got them out of debt. But this is a pretty cool thing. He sent out 25 letters first time. Basically said, I'm in way over my head, but we are not going to file bankruptcy. We're going to pay all of our debts, but we're going to need some time. And I remember thinking, wow, what if everybody writes him back and says they want all their money now? What's this guy going to do? I'll never forget this. Out of 25 letters, he got two back. Thank you for your letter, and we're willing to work with you. Give us a call. We'll set up a payment plan. And I watched God just sort of manage this thing over the course of several years. And about the time that, you know, he'd send out another round of letters to the 23 or 22, and then to the 19, and then the 16. And everybody just kind of worked with him until they finally got out of debt, including the IRS. He was upfront with those people about what their business had done, and they sensed goodwill, and they worked with him. But I also think there's more than just goodwill. Proverbs 6:7 says, when your ways please the Lord, he will make your enemies into friends. Number 9, stick to it. Stick to it. Let's not get tired of doing what is right, for after a while we will reap a harvest of blessing if we don't get discouraged and give up. Don't get discouraged and give up. You know, for most people that I know, getting out of debt requires a lot of sacrifice. Requires a lot of discipline. You're going to have some frank discussions in your home about this. You're going to suddenly not be buying things that you're used to buying. It's not easy getting out of debt. And it can be very discouraging at times, particularly when you get some unexpected things. They're really never unexpected in the world we live in. But it's going to take you some time. One of the things about getting out of debt is perhaps you look at it and you think, you know, I think part of it, Seth, is we're in debt because we really haven't followed God's plan for our finances. Managing our finances God's way. However, oftentimes, this is really a bigger problem, is we've really not lived our lives by God's plan. It's not just our finances, our family finances. We're really not living our lives by God's plan. That's often true. Money is one of those things that gets your attention about a bigger issue. We've talked about debt. Debt's a big thing. It's a mess. But all of us have a bigger debt that we owe. Not just to credit card companies or to our mortgage company or to car companies. We have this debt. Colossians says, we owed a debt because we broke God's laws. He's not talking about a debt of finances. It's a personal debt. It's a debt between one person, me, you, between God. We owed a debt because we broke God's law. That debt listed all the rules that we failed to follow. But God forgave us and took away that debt and nailed it to the cross. You know, when John came up and led us in our time of just giving thanks, the thing that was running through my head the most was, you know, God, I am still absolutely astounded that you still want me to be involved with you. Out of all I've done, all I've said, how I've treated people, things I've said to people, things I've thought about people, that self-centeredness I battle every day, how is it you still want to be with me? That's a debt I'll never repay. I'll never understand the love of God for me. And really, that's where following God starts. It really is about God's grace. The miracle and the wonder of His grace that wants people like us to be in His family and to enjoy all the blessings that He wants to pour out if we will just trust Him and follow Him. Just absolutely astounding to me. That invitation goes out every day, and it goes out even now from God's heart to your heart. Let's pray together. Father, though we have talked about financial debt, There's another debt that is much more serious. And that is the countless times that we have lived life our way, our wisdom, our thoughts, our needs. We've put you on the back burner, put other people on the back burner, put service on the back burner. We do it with our time, we do it with our money, we do it with our words, we do it in our attitudes towards you and towards people. Every day, all day long. And yet the wonder is that you still love us. And you want us to simply come to you and acknowledge what should be patently obvious. I am a sinner through and through. And I need forgiveness. I have broken your laws innumerable times. Just this past week. And yet, the cross of Jesus Christ tells me there is something greater than my sin. And that's the wonder of forgiveness, the wonder of your love. Magnificent grace that trumps even our sin. Have you given your heart to Jesus Christ? It's not about being religious. It's about entering into a relationship where you really let God be God in your life. And seek to follow Him and trust Him in your day-to-day life. Thankfully, we do that as forgiven children. Cleansed, washed, brand new start. No matter what we've done, where we've been. Astounding. Let's pray a simple prayer. Lord, I come to you as a humble child, and I do need forgiveness. Wash me and cleanse me with the blood of Christ. And I want to be a part of your family as one of your kids. Just take me as I am. Lord, we thank you for your mercy and the wonder of your grace. Thank you that you'll take us as we are. Father, as we think about our finances, we've talked about these last few weeks, help us to honor you with our money and our hearts.